You're making one right decision today. You're listening to Handcuffs and Sage.
Three badass moms bringing you all the true crime and paranormal your heart desires.
I'm Red.
I'm Timo.
I'm Dre. And don't let your kids listen. Seriously, just don't.
Hey, it's Handcuffs and Sage!
Ooh, woo, woo, woo,
hey! This is Red.
Hey, this is Timo.
Hey, this is Dre.
Oh my goodness, y'all. Guess what I was doing earlier? I shipped out the cutest Patreon swag for our Patreon users. And then I was like totally bummed because there's so many people that listen to this podcast that are missing out on this cute stuff.
Yeah.
They're missing out, you guys. Check out our Patreon page. We have three different levels, $1, $3, and $5. And I'm going to send you some cute stuff when you support your favorite ladies. And you guys can be badasses when you do that. Think of it this way. Like, how much does someone spend at Starbucks a day? Like $5, $6? That's like totally. $150 a month. And we're asking for, what, tops $5 a month? To be entertained? Come on.
And, you know, we're in the works of getting exclusive Patreon supporter access, which means if you are a patron, then you have access to unlock real cool stuff on and watch it and hear it and do other kinds of things. So
that nobody else is going to hear and can't enjoy it. And that's sad. That makes me sad. All right, y'all. I just had to let you know. I just thought everything was really cute. I was super proud of myself for spoiling our supporters because we love them so much. And I'm so excited for what's to come with a lot of things we have in the works and people we're going to have on and, you know, things that we're going to do to mix it up. So I feel really good and excited about the podcast future. And I just love hearing from random people that they've been listening to us. And I had no idea that they had been listening to us. And it just, you know, it feels good.
It does. And
feeling it, girls. I'm feeling it.
So
probably just the positivity, which I also threw in the swag bags. Oh, so nice.
When we first opened and I started laughing, I was laughing because now this is like going to be forever burned in my brain. Red considers herself a podcast whore. And now this week she called herself a podcast snob because she finally decided to listen to us. She didn't get too far in, but.
Well, let me just say why. To defend myself. My voice drives me nuts. And you know, when I was in high school, I was traumatized because some guy I just met was like, your voice is super mousy. And I've held that with me all these years.
When I edit, I listen to us over and over and over again. And I actually really enjoy your voice very much. And sometimes I don't know who's talking between me and Dre. Me and Dre kind of sound alike some of the time, and then other times we don't. But anyways, when Red decided she was going to listen to a little bit of our episode, she's like, we introduce ourselves two times. And I'm just like, oh, my God.
Oops.
No, it's not an oops. The first thing is like, hey, this is us. This is the podcast. And then we're like saying hey to our peeps, like, hey, this is Red, hey, this is Timo, hey, this is Dre.
So okay, podcast meeting after recording, okay. wow. I completely forgot how fantastic our intro music is.
Oh,
like,
God.
The moment I hear it, I go, oh yeah, yeah, you know, it just feels good. Here we go. I enjoyed that a lot.
So shout out to We Are Wasted. It's been a year since we met Ryan, who's in the band, because we did Clued Up last year. We're doing Clued Up again. And we met Ryan. Yes, because Brian works, or Brian, Ryan works at Draconinum, it's dragon in German, in down in downtown Newhall.
Draconium.
Yeah. And that's where we went after Clued Up. That's how we, you know, we entered all of our information, and then we won, we caught the killer. And then we were like, hey dude. And then we just like through like communication or whatever, we're like, we want to use your song for our opening and closing. And they're like, sure. We're like, yes. So
it's so fantastic. I love We Are Wasted so much. And that was in the before times when we could eat inside a restaurant. Yes. Do y'all remember that? Good times. That was good times.
No.
So even though we sat outside, we didn't need to sit outside. We could have sat inside.
We had the choice, Timo. There was a choice. And I love that we're all getting ready. Our crime group that we have is getting ready for Clued Up in a couple weeks. And I love doing things like this. It brings me a lot of joy to spend time with y'all. We all get into it. It's just such a fun day. How y'all feeling this week? Good? First of all, there's so many different types of English accents in this episode. So I am going to try my best to give it all. You're welcome. Jesus.
Okay.
Mwah, mwah, mwah. But I'll do my best. That's all I can do. Okay. Part three of The Ripper. Again, this is on Netflix. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I've watched them over and over and over again for the podcast. And I think this one is craziness. We talk about a lot of different elements that all of a sudden come together at this time, and the things that come out are just mind-blowing, just craziness. So I'm really glad that we're doing part three today. Buckle up, grab your positivity, and let's get it on. Okay, so we start off part three, and people are talking about this time where, you know, the Ripper has been active, the murders are happening, and they really want everything to go back to normal, and they want to feel safe, and that just isn't happening, right? It's a scary time. Think about living in this area with these murders happening. I just can't imagine how scary that is. So in April 1979, we're talking with Krista. She's with the newspaper, and she has great eyeshadow technique. I just want to do a side note there. Her eyes are just, she's given it to this day. It's looking good. So she's sharing with us that she works with the newspaper at the time, and she gets a knock on her front door. It just is one of their photographers that works with the newspaper. And he says, you know, a body has been found in Halifax. And this is crazy to Krista. She says that Halifax is like this really exclusive area, right? We're not talking about red light district. We're talking, you know, higher end area. And she gets there, and it's just blowing her mind that she is seeing the Ripper crew work a crime scene in this area. And so she actually calls them the Ripper Squad, which is just kind of crazy, but I guess that's what they called themselves. The Ripper Squad was in Halifax, working the crime scene. And this is the first time that she ever sees a dead body like in front of her. And it was just shocking to her. It terrified her. You can get a sense throughout this episode, especially how this is affecting the women in the area, right? And how they're feeling and dealing with everything that's happening. And she's definitely affected, and she's definitely freaked out by all of it. The body that is found is of 19-year-old Josephine Whitaker, and she's found in Saddle Park playing field. She was actually attacked on the side of the road, but then her body's like dragged, I guess, like 50 yards in, and they can, you know, see the drag marks, but it's enough and displayed enough so someone can find it, which we know is really important for him. Mm-hmm. For the bodies to be found, right? He mm-hmm. wants it to happen. So Josephine Whitaker, this sweet baby angel who's only 19 years old, she was not a prostitute. She was not a prostitute. And so now we're hearing, you know, on the news and from the police that the Ripper has moved from the red light district. He's changed his tactics and everyone's feeling really scared because it's not just prostitutes, you know, students are getting killed. Chris Gregg with the Yorkshire Police Department is put on the Halifax case. And he talks a lot through this part three. I actually really like his feeling. And he does a lot of cool stuff in this episode also. He said that after he was put on the case of Josephine in Halifax, that he was asked to come to a debriefing at the court building. And he said this is actually really unusual. So he shows up, you know, police officers are there, George Oldfield is there. And George says that he received a tape and he wanted to play it for all the officers, okay? It was sent by the same person who had previously sent letters to the police department. So all of a sudden the room goes quiet. Chris says it's silent in this room of officers because they're all waiting to hear what's on this tape, okay? Hmm. He says they push play and you hear a voice. Are you ready for the voice?
Yes.
Okay. One second.
Just like drink.
Oh no.
First of many accents. I'm Jack. I see you are slow at catching me. I have the greatest respect for you, George, but Lord, you're no nearer catching me than 4 years ago when I started. I reckon your boys are letting you down, George. They can't be much good, can they? I am not quite sure when I strike again, but it will be definitely sometime this year. I'm not sure where, maybe Manchester. I like it there. There's plenty of them knocking about. They never learn, do they, George? At the rate I'm going, I should be in the book of records. I think it's up to 11 now, isn't it? Well, it's been nice chatting with you, George. Yours, Jack the Ripper.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Like that?
Oh, my God. That. He's calling himself Jack the Ripper, huh?
Yep. Wow. And everyone was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh,
right?
My God.
Uh-huh. Right? All those cops were like furiously eating all the donuts because they were stress eating. And they're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Oh, what are we going to do? Okay. So now they have his voice. They have a picture composite. They have the tire marks. They have a shoe print and the 5-pound note. Okay. Let's catch him, bitches. Let's do it. Come on. So they're saying that he has a Sunderland or what's called a Geordie accent, okay? So okay. They're trying to listen to his voice and localize where exactly he's from based on his accent, okay? So linguistics at Leeds University, Jack Windsor Lewis says the voice comes from Castleton. He's saying the person lives in Castleton based on his accent. That's like saying, I know Red lives in SEV for sure because of her accent. That's what he's saying. Okay. I want y'all to think about what he just said. Okay. So Castleton was actually a mining town that was hit really hard by recession. And so they send out 100 detectives and they were going house to house making inquiries. And they're talking to anyone in this area with a Geordie accent. Okay?
Okay.
Holy cannolis. So now it's May 1979 and Margaret Thatcher is the prime minister. Okay? Did you guys watch The Crown on Netflix?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Is it about her?
The last season has her in it.
Okay.
The Crown is about the queen and her family.
Right. Now, who, that's not Gillian Anderson that plays her, right? Who plays?
It is.
It is. Okay.
It is.
That's on my list. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So we see a clip of Margaret Thatcher at the time. And here is accent number two. You're welcome. Where is the discord? May we bring harmony? No one else has been as English as Margaret Thatcher in the history of England. Amazing. Amazing. Okay, so all of this stuff is happening. First woman prime minister, huge deal. Huge deal, right?
Hey, Red, can you say that in like our English? I didn't understand one word you said in that accent.
Where there is discord, may we bring harmony.
Oh, okay.
Where there is discord, may we bring harmony. See, it's like the exact same thing. I don't know why you can understand. Okay. Okay.
All right. I think I was just more enthralled with you doing the accent than actually listening to what you were actually saying. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
I am trying to give it 100%. I'm trying
you
to.
You are. You best. Are, girlfriend. You are.
I'm just trying. Now I just want to quit. Okay, I'm back on. Okay, no, we're going to go.
You're doing it good. Shut up.
Okay. We meet Mo Leah. She was a student at the time in Leeds and is saying the prime minister being a woman for the first time was a huge deal. Huge deal. Especially, you know, college times. That's when we're all coming into our womanhood. We're finding our independence, right? Then we have the first woman prime minister there. It was a big time, okay? She was in college and she was working towards a fine art degree at the time. And she's saying, look, at that point in time, anything went. She had her hair cut like super short, bleached with yellow tips. She was taught like a punk rock chick, right? She said birth control was easy to get. It was a very liberating time for women. She had lots of friends. They all enjoyed going to these punk band shows at the time, right? They were feeling their womanhood. They were having a really good time, being really independent. You know, it's just, I can just picture that. We all hope for our daughters, right, to be in college and just, yeah, I can do anything, woo, right? And that's what they were feeling at the time, okay? And Mo is saying that really, she was only slightly aware of the Ripper situation and that she thought, you know, it's not going to affect me because he only kills prostitutes, okay? Mm-hmm. So then September 1979, there's another murder and it's Barbara Leach and she is a student at Bradford, okay? And this happened around 1 a.m. Sunday morning, and she had just been walking home in the dark. So sad. A journalist said the women in the press room were completely freaked out, and men were like, oh, it's another murder. Let's get on it. Let's cover the story. And she said, and that was the difference, right? Women are the one at risk. We're the ones that are freaked out, and men just, there's just no connection there, right? This murder of Barbara happened 4 months and 28 days from the last murder. So then we hear from Beryl Leach, and this is Barbara's mother, and she's speaking on television. She said Barbara was a very, very good kid, and she was really good about not being alone. Like, she would always do the buddy system, right? That this wasn't an issue for her. The problem is that the area she was in with her friends kind of stopped, and it was only like a 5 minute walk left to her home. And so she's like, oh, just five more minutes to my house. Awful. And then if you think about that, who thinks that this 5 minutes will change everything, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes me really sad. It makes me really sad. And this part is going to be hard for me to get through because I cried when I watched this. So then we hear from Barbara's father. Okay. Then we hear from Barbara's father, and he said, my wife bought a rather expensive dress for her to be buried in. And my wife said, this is for her graduation, for her wedding, for the birth of her babies. that's what's been taken from us. And it just kills me to think that those are all things that are taken from them, right? And that just killed me. And that all of a sudden everyone's realizing that this could be anyone's daughter, right? So Mo is saying, look, this was a huge turning point when Barbara died. This was a student, and now everyone is scared. The university provided buses and escorts to get girls home from class. And now they were just more guarded, you know, at any time. And she said that it just felt like all of a sudden it was going against the grain of how they were feeling, right? They had been feeling really independent. And now they were all really afraid. And so it was just a hard time. Ronald Gregory, the chief constable, he's, you know, on the news. We're seeing a clip of him. And he's saying they must not walk out at night alone. It's not safe for them to walk about early in the morning. So he's just telling them to stay inside basically at night. And then we meet Julie Bindel. And let me just say, I never, ever, ever want to get into a disagreement or a physical altercation with Julie Bindel, because she is a badass and she is not messing around. Okay. So she was a student at this time, and she's actually with Women Against Violence Against Women. And I can get behind that. I'm against violence against women, sure. Like for sure. Right. So she's talking to us, and she says in a really sweet way, just kidding. She's just like, we have a group of incompetent police officers saying you can't be out at night and don't get into a taxi and you can't do anything that you were doing before. And let me tell you, Julie is pissed. So the feminist movement in LEAD was huge at the time. And she's pissed. She's like, men can go out, right? They can go out and they can drink. But women, if we want to go out, we have to have a supervision of a man because they need protection. But you don't know if that man is the Ripper. You don't know who the Ripper is. It was just a totally a hard thing for all these women to go through, okay? All of a sudden, they're basically being told to stay inside, right? So Ron Gregory decides to launch this thing called Project R, okay? So in Project R, he's putting out all like the clips of like Ripper's handwriting. He's putting up kiosks across town. On the kiosk, you see like the writing he has, the picture composite that they have, and they spend about £1 million on this project.
Wow.
Okay. They have a road show going. With this road show, it takes around the recording of the voice. So it goes to places where people can stop and hear the voice of the killer, right? And then they have billboards up, right? So they're putting a lot of money into this. They want people to see it and hear it, and they want tips, okay? So then we have David Zacharyson, and you know, he's a police officer. And he said that they had like their own elimination techniques in place here, that they thought that if they put this stuff out, that somebody would just call in and be like, oh, hey, I saw your thing. It's so-and-so. And you know, that never happened. It never happened, which is so frustrating. So he's saying, David is saying, look, when we saw the handwriting, it wasn't in a full transcript, okay? They didn't have full transcripts of the letters sent to all the police departments, just like little clips, right? Just handwriting pieces. So he put in a request and he got the three full letters to read and like go through, right? He's on the case. So then he's like, I'm reading these, and he's like, something is really peculiar here. Something's not right, okay? He said in one of the letters, it says cursed coppers. And he's like, that's like Victorian language, right? That's not something that somebody now would say, right? So he's like, okay, so we get a book from the library with the 1888 Jack the Ripper letters, and there's total similarities in them. He's like, oh my goodness, okay? So one of them says, I'm down with whores. in 1979, once like my purpose is to rid the streets of them. In an 1888 letter, it says, my leather apron gave me fits. In 1979, it says, that photo in the paper gave me fits, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, he's copying. He's copying the original Jack the Ripper letters. Wow. In tone, in language, right? And he's like, oh my, he's like, alarm bells are going off, right? Something's not right here. So then he's reading these letters, he's kind of putting this together, and then Project R is launched for people to see handwriting, people to hear this voice, right? And he's like, I'm freaking out because this is being launched and I'm going through these letters and I find this flaw, okay? When the letter was sent, the body of Yvonne Pearson had not been discovered, okay? He could have said in his letter that there was another body out there, you know, but he didn't. He only claimed the number of murders that had been reported in the press.
Oh.
And then he goes through them and realizes everything in the letters is only things you could find in the press.
Oh,
and he's
no.
like, oh, this is a hoax. This is a hoax. He's realizing it's a hoax at the same time this huge project is being launched that they just spent £1 million on.
Wow.
Crazy, right? Yeah.
£1 million mm-hmm. back then is $120 million today.
Oh, shit. You know what? Talk about reasonable though, right? It's crazy. So David's like freaking out. He's like, everyone can hear this voice now on this roadshow at the mall, at the schools, and it's not even the real killer's voice.
Oh no.
So they know the person that sent that tape is the exact same person that sent those letters. If those letters are bullshit, that tape is bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. And Mo is saying at the time, look, all the college students are listening to these tapes over and over again, trying to figure out who has a Geordie accent. Who do we know with the Geordie accent?
Oh, my goodness.
Are you effing kidding me? Are you effing kidding me? So George Oldfield is feeling very optimistic, right? Because he has these letters and tape. Like, we're going to get him, you guys. Like, now's our time. So David sends the information that he finds and he sends it in. He's like, look, I think these are fake. This is a hoax, right? And Oldfield ignores it, totally ignores it.
Mm-mm.
And David's like, look, he wanted the letters to be true because if the letters weren't true, we're back to square one. So he ignored them. It is crazy to me. Because then really they're contributing to him getting away with it for even longer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mo is talking about this time. She says that there's a very dark atmosphere at the university. You know, watch what you're wearing. You can't be alone. You can't be out at night. You have to have an alarm on you. So it's very scary for these students, these girls, okay? That she felt very vulnerable. She was very frustrated. And she just finally thought, look, I just can't live like this. I just can't do this, right? So she decides to go out the weekend before her 21st birthday. Girl, Mo, don't do it, girl. It was a Saturday night. Yeah, it's a Saturday night. She said it was really cold out. She met up with some friends at a pub. You know, they had like two beers. And then they said, look, we should probably get back because we don't want to be out that late, okay? All right, so they leave the pub. They walk to a park, and then Mo says to her friends, okay, from here, I have to go to the town so I can catch the bus. So she's walking to town so she can catch the bus, and she notices that a street light is out. Ugh. So now it's very dark. She's walking alone at night in the area that a serial killer is active, okay? Mm-hmm. I would be terrified at this point. So it's very dark. All of a sudden, she hears a voice behind her. The voice says, hey, hi, like that. And she said it was a Yorkshire accent. Right? Can y'all write that down? Okay, great. Yorkshire accent, okay? She turns around and she's like, I didn't recognize the chap. And so she walks away, right? Doesn't know who it is. Starts walking in this dark alley, okay? I just put myself in her shoes and I would just be pissing myself at this point. She said she felt total fear. She was freaking out. Like, what the fuck do I do here, right? Yeah. She heard footsteps behind her. And she said that they went quicker and quicker. And then they caught up with her and she felt a massive blow to the back of her head.
Oh no.
And then she said, oh my God. She said, I saw the pavement coming up towards my face because she was falling. And that was it. I woke up in the hospital bed. She had a broken jaw, a cracked skull, a cracked eyebrow. She had cuts and bruises. And she said it was just hideous. It was bad. She was messed up, you guys. What a terrifying thing to freaking happen. Oh my God. Oh my God. When I'm afraid my knees buckle and I pee myself immediately, that's what would have happened in this situation for sure if I was there. Okay. Her doctor said to her that these are very similar injuries to the Ripper victims that she has on her body. And she's like, nope, not going to hear that. I didn't tell anyone that the doctor told me that because she just didn't even want to hear it. It was too much for her. She said, I didn't want to be associated with a killer of prostitutes, right? It was just too dark. It was too sinister. I just wanted to get on my way, finish my degree and get out of there. She just couldn't handle it. She's a baby, right? She's a baby in college and this horrible thing happened. The police come and she tells them, she says she relayed the events, gives them details and they leave. Okay. She says she'd never heard from them again. No follow-up there. She said that they played it down because they didn't want to face public ridicule. Because if they came up publicly and said a student was attacked, freak people out more. And then this witness is saying it was a Yorkshire accent. That's not good. So they just took her statement and they walked away. Crazy. So after a year of Project R running with the handwriting, with the voice, it has produced nothing. Nothing has come from it.
Wow.
So November 1980, the Ripper strikes again. Jacqueline Hill, a third year student, she was studying French at the university. She was out and somebody, like one of her friends, I guess, found her handbag with blood on it on the street. They're like, oh shit, this is her handbag. It's got blood on it. They called the police. The police arrive, right? But then they get called to a different situation happening and they leave. Her body is found in the morning. 10 hours after the handbag was found. So instead of like being like, oh, this is the lady handbag of a college student with blood on it. Maybe we should maybe search the area. They left. Yep. And so that came out in the newspaper, what the police officers did. And people lost their shit. Yes. They were like, it was at a boiling point. They were like, fuck you. You are not doing your job. How could you just leave? Oh, it was bad. It was a bad scene. They show all sorts of clips of like George Oldfield, like trying to defend these cops that just left. Like it was bad. It was really bad. Mm-hmm. So men would offer to walk women home, but women would say no because they didn't know if they were the Ripper or not. So it was just like this vicious cycle happening like all
That's
the time.
So scary.
It is. And they said that then a curfew is put out for women. Okay. So women go, oh, hell no. Nope. And this is when shit gets real. The women come together because that's what women do. And they start all these marches. All these marches come together. And it's amazing the footage that they post. Like all these women, like thousands of women, London, Manchester, Yorkshire, all coming together saying, fuck you. You know, we're the ones out here. You need to protect us, but why aren't you saying men have to stay home too, right? Why aren't you going after the men? Why aren't you doing your job? And they also said this was really about male violence too, not just the Ripper. It just felt like women hit a point where they're saying no more, okay? So the footage is actually really incredible of them doing these marches. One of the women is doing like a small interview at the march. It's on the news. And she's saying that men just don't have this connection as to like what they're doing and how they objectify women, that on page one of a newspaper, right, they're covering a terrible murder of a woman. And then on page three, they have a naked woman, you know, advertising soap or whatever the fuck. And they showed it. And she's like, it's just completely disconnected. Don't treat us like objects. How about that? Mm-hmm. Right? It was crazy. I wish I could go back in time and go to one of these marches. It looked like fucking fun, dude. They were all just doing it. Women power. Anyway, so they're out. They say that these marches are having like a profound effect on feminism at the time in the area, and they're just fed up. So then we meet Joan Smith, and she's a straight badass. I love her. I love her vibe. She's a journalist, and she's like, this is just ridiculous. You know, you go to a press conference at the time, and there's probably like 100 journalists and media there covering the story. And there's maybe 5 women. She's like, so the people that are part of this case, it's male police officers, it's male journalists, it's male media. Where's the women's voice, right? Where are we in the mix of this? So she's like, I was all about the Ripper case and I was going to cover it and I was going to just find out everything I could find out about it. She's a badass. I love Joan. So she says that a special report was made about the Ripper case, like with all the information they had so far on it. And this special report was sent out to like several law enforcement. Okay. So she's like, I want that special report. How am I going to get that special report? Right. So this smarty pants hits up the FBI in the US and fills out this thing under the American Freedom of Information Act with the United States. And guess what? She freaking gets the report from the US FBI, this journalist, such a badass. So yeah. She gets the report and she's like, holy shitballs. She's just shocked by everything that is in this thing. She's blown away. She said the misogyny, it's like dripping misogyny. Because it's written by these men and the things that they were saying about the women, it was just disgusting. And the comments that they put in this report about murder victims, right? Mm-hmm. She's like, with Wilma McCann, like their comments were her house was filthy. She would drink at night. And I had to like pause it right there. I'm like, oh shit. Well, I hope they don't stop by my house and judge my life, okay? And they had always presented Wilma as a prostitute, remember? Mm-hmm. And she said, reading this report, there was nothing to back that up. There was no convictions, nobody in the family, your neighbor said she was a prostitute. Why are the police saying she was a prostitute? And then why are they saying to the public that he's only going after prostitutes, right? This doesn't make sense. So then she's reading about Irene Richardson. They said Irene Richardson was a prostitute. She had no convictions and nobody else said she was a prostitute. But for some reason, the officers are. So she's like, something is wrong here. Something is not right. The heart of their theory wasn't even true, right? Because they kept saying it's prostitutes, he loves the prostitutes. And it just wasn't true. These were mothers. These were mothers, okay? So she's saying, look, if they can't understand the killer, right, and what he's doing, they are not going to catch him. And that is so true, right? That's why we have the profiling and the stuff like that that we have. And they're not doing anything right. It's a hot mess. So it turns out, you guys, hold on to your butts. Wilma was not the first victim. what?
Wow.
That's what they had said. Remember how they said Wilma was their first victim? Mm-mm, no, she was not. Others were attacked, but they were not included in the version that they were giving the public.
Wow.
They were not prostitutes. None of them were prostitutes. And because they didn't include these attacks, it excluded them as really important eyewitnesses on who to look for. So they really, really dropped the ball here, okay? One of the survivors, her name is Olive Smelt. I love you, Olive. Your last name is rough, honey. Smelt. Oh, poor thing. She is a survivor and she's a mother and she's just a lovely woman, just a wonderful woman. And she was attacked by the Ripper. He attacks her and then a neighbor is driving by and the headlights like scare the shit out of him and he runs away. So she survives. She tells the officers, you know, what happened and that he had a Yorkshire accent.
Yes.
This was before Wilma was killed.
Wow.
Okay. I want y'all to take that in. Mm-hmm. Okay. She was not a prostitute, right? But according to the police, he only attacks and kills prostitutes. So this really actually upset Olive. She's like, because this whole time she knew the truth. She told the cops knew. And then they would go on the news and tell the public something completely different. How frustrating would that be? Mm-hmm. That's awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So hold on to your butts. So then at this time, the police department is straight up eliminating suspects without a Geordie accent. So even though we have survivors saying it was a Yorkshire accent, mm-mm. If you had a Yorkshire accent, you could skip away free because on this tape, that was a fucking hoax. They were looking for a Geordie accent. Mm. Think about that. Think about, oh, it's so frustrating. Yeah. So frustrating. Why doesn't anyone listen to women? I don't understand. The police are looking for a made up person. And then you think about the douchebag that took the time to write these fucked up letters and make this tape. And it was all bullshit, knowing that the police were trying to find this person with this accent, just sitting back and kind of having a nice laugh. And then think about the Ripper going, oh, they're looking for someone completely different than me. And knowing it, we see the chief constable speaking on television. And he's saying, well, the type of woman has changed. The first 9 or 10 were prostitutes. Some member of the public knows and somebody needs to turn them in. Well, that's bullshit. Because we know that there was other victims that were not prostitutes. And some of the victims who lived were able to verify that it was a Yorkshire accent. So I can't even. So many women died. So many women died, you guys. Here we go. This is when it gets good. So buckle up. January 1981. In the Sheffield area, two officers see a car, right? They're working at night. They see a car. A man and woman are inside, okay? The number plates don't match the type of car it's supposed to be on, okay? So that's a criminal offense. So they take the man in. The officer takes the man into the station. He looks over cash. And he sees that amazing picture composite on the wall and goes, that guy looks like that guy, right? Weird. So then the officer is like, I'm going to go back to that area that the car was parked, right? I'm going to go back to that area. He goes back by himself. He searches and grids this whole area. They said meticulously on his own, and he finds a hammer and a knife.
Mm.
They have The Ripper.
Oh my goodness.
So then we'll find out who that is in part one. Yay!
Oh my goodness.
Yay. You always do this.
I thought we were only doing three. I was getting all excited. And then, yeah.
Oh, honey. That's so sweet. Hold on to your butts for part four. Cute. I'll have to work on more accents.
We need to be in harmony.
All right, y'all. You're welcome.
Yay.
That Margaret Thatcher Love. That's
great.
Oh, God. I love the Ripper. I love the Ripper. The toxic masculinity in this series. It's just, mwah, mwah. We hate women. Go cook our dinner. Stop talking.
Oh, my God.
That's the whole thing that is just happening the whole time. It's just insanity.
Wow.
It really is.
Yeah.
Oh, Timo. Give it, girl. I need some paranormal, like, chills.
I'm going to do an oldie but goodie. I'm going to do an episode that I did back in our super fuck days. This was actually in episode 4. So we were little virgins. Yeah, virgins in the podcast world.
We need to stop and tell y'all that when we first started and we were so excited, our podcast was originally called Super Fucked. Right. And we were like all about it. And then like my family was like, why? You know, and then other people were like, why? And then it was hard to post our shit sometimes on different platforms because of our name. We changed it to Handcuffs and Sage, but we do love it. Mm-hmm. But originally it was so fun being super fun.
Yeah.
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 So much fun.
But this is such a fun story. And this is on our bucket list road trip hotel stay list. So I'm going to talk about the Queen Mary. Yeah.
Yay!
You know, I love it.
Often I check that shit to see when we can book to stay there. I'm not even kidding. All the time.
Yeah, I hope it's soon, man. Jeez.
They are strict as hell over there at the Queen Mary.
They're strict anyway.
Yeah.
You know, yes.
During normal
times. Strict. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. I swear, y'all, if something happens to the Queen Mary and we don't get to stay there and like have combos with ghosts in the middle of the night, I'm going to lose my mind because I really want that to happen.
I know.
I really want it.
All right. Well, okay, keep up the good work. Yeah. Keep up the good work. We'll get in.
Guys, I'm just doing my best.
Okay. So a little history first. The RMS Queen Mary was launched in 1936. She's 1,019 feet long. She was the longest ship in the world at that time. And basically that's longer than the Eiffel Tower. So take the Eiffel Tower, flip it over, and she was longer than that.
She is old, honey.
Yes. She was bigger, faster, and more powerful than the Titanic. And she, to this day, is still considered to be one of the most elegant passenger ships ever built.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And you just got to look at it in, you know, non-technology, you know, ways.
Yes. Yeah, it's old school nice.
Yes, for sure.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So she was drafted in World War II because of her power. They painted her all gray and they called her the Gray Goose. So we'll get into that a little, or not the Gray Goose. I'm sorry.
I love Gray Goose.
Oh. The Gray Ghost. The Gray Ghost.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, the Gray Ghost. Well, you know what I have on my mind right now. So she was decommissioned.
Yes.
Maybe. I don't have any alcohol today, so that's probably what my problem is. So she was decommissioned in 1967 and permanently docked in Long Beach, California, where she is a luxury hotel and living museum. So we're going to get into the little haunted stuff right now. The Queen Mary is considered the most haunted ship in the world. She has a long list of ghost stories. and she's riddled with phantom figures, cold spots, and disembodied voices.
Me too, girl.
So the first story was in 1966, July 10th, early in the morning, the crew ran an emergency drill. John,
did you say July 10th?
Yes.
Oh, July that's 10th. One of my 15 sisters' birthday. Aww, that was a good day.
Well, this isn't a good day on the Queen Mary, though.
No, so, terrible day.
Yeah. John Petter, he was 18. He was a crew member. He was near the engine room during the drill and attempted to squeeze through door 13 while closing. It takes 60 seconds for this door to complete the process of closing. He unfortunately did not make it, and the door crushed him to death, nearly cutting him in two. So he was trying to get through it, and he got stuck, and he died.
And he was cut in two? He was cut in two?
It said nearly cut in two, yeah. So although his name was John, today they call him, this is horrible, Half Hatch Harry.
That is so messed up. You know, like, in the afterlife, he's like, what the hell? Who picked that?
I know. Half-Hatch Harry.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Right. So I'm just trying to figure out.
So wait, it took 60 seconds for the door to close, but he couldn't get out of the way?
That's what I'm saying. If it took that long, 60 seconds is a long time.
That's a whole minute.
Yeah.
So was he held down? Did he Was he tying his shoe?
Girls, listen. So these are my original notes from over a year ago, okay? But I've done some research since, so I'm going to answer that question for you, okay?
Oh, thank God, that'll drive me nuts.
So he's seen in the corridors, the elevators near the engine room, the narrow passage from the engine room to the stern is called Shaft Alley, and he has been reported, you know, in that area, as well as a bearded man in overalls. He follows people basically, and then he disappears near door 13. So who is this bearded man in overalls? Why is he near door 13 where John Petter was killed?
Side note, I am very, very attracted to men in overalls with beards, and I'm not even kidding.
I get it.
Hey.
Also in that area, if you're like on a tour walking around that area, your clothes or your purses will get tugged, and then pipes in that area start banging, and then you can see greasy handprints appear.
So gross. Ugh.
Yeah. One of the saddest stories happened in room B474. Now, this is one of the most haunted rooms on the ship.
Yes.
There's two different stories I found. One, it's a man and his family. The other story I read was it was a stranger who killed this family. So I'm just going to read as if it was the man and his family. So a man strangled his wife and young daughter in bed. His older daughter was in the bathroom. He then went in there and shot her, and then turn the gun on himself. Now that daughter, we know her as Dana, and she is also seen throughout the ship. You can hear her playing in the areas amongst the crates, and some have heard her crying for her mom in the pool area.
Oh, I need that. Ugh, that is so sad.
The other story is a killer strangled her family in room B474, Dana's little sister and mother on the bed, and then went in and shot Dana to death in the bathroom. So I don't know what story is true, but I wanted to give you two sides of that one. So room 474 on level B, I don't know if that's available, but we can check that one out. The most famous ghost on the ship is Little Jackie. Now, Little Jackie, or Jacqueline Torin, was about 5 to 6 years old, and she has said to have drowned in the ship's second class pool. Now, I don't know if you know this, but the Queen Mary has two pools, the first class and the second class. because back in those days, the rich people didn't go swimming with the poor folk.
Yeah, yeah, you can't mix that up.
Nope, nope. So supposedly she drowned, and she continues to haunt it to this day. Jackie is the most recorded ghost on EVPs for investigators that, you know, investigate the ship. You guys, I have some crazy stuff to talk about her. So tour guides will ask Jackie to sing, and she will. You can hear her giggling, laughing, splashing in the pool, and asking for her parents and for her teddy bear. Aww. Little wet footprints are also seen walking to the locker room from the pool. Some visitors believe that Jackie also has a friend named Sarah who drowned in the same pool in 1949. Okay.
She made a friend.
Yeah. So when the Queen Mary was in World War II, they would sail in zigzag formation. And the reason why they did this was to avoid what they call U-boat attacks. So smaller mm-hmm. ships would escort the larger ships. And I guess the U-boats are like submarines. So submarines would, I guess they would shoot at these ships. Well, if you're going in a zigzag formation, there was no way for them to actually hit the ship. So Germany had targeted the Queen Mary because Adolf Hitler told them that he would pay any submarine captain $250,000 to sink her. So in October 1942, the Queen Mary's escorted ship, HMS Carousel, it was struggling to keep up with the Queen Mary. So instead of doing the zigzag formation, they decided to go straight instead. Unfortunately, at that time, the Queen Mary hit the carousel and split it into half. Killing over 300 crewmen. Yeah.
That's the Queen awful. Mary, oh my God.
The Queen Mary actually, unfortunately, couldn't stop. It had to continue on because it would put them in danger. It sank within 6 minutes and only 99 of the entire crew survived.
That's awful. You know what? I'm just going to say it. I feel like Hitler was a dick, you guys. I just feel like he made some bad like life decisions, you know what I mean? And it affected a lot of people. And I hate that they were in this war and they hit the ship and it was an accident.
I know.
That's
and
awful.
Then just it feels horrible that you just have to keep on going and let them die. Yeah, so horrible.
So super fact.
So now if you are on the bow of the Queen Mary down like, you know, down in there, you can actually hear the sounds of rushing water, metal tearing, and men screaming. And then others have heard dozens of hands pounding on the sides of the ship, begging to be let aboard.
I'm not even kidding. Like the thought of someone being trapped in a water situation like this and dying really, really bothers me.
Yeah,
like,
it bothers me too.
Physically makes me sick. It's awful. I hate it.
Yeah, it's horrifying. John Henry was one of the construction crews in the 1930s, and it's believed that he died near the generator room. In that area, a shadowy figure is seen, and people will have their cheeks brushed. They'll get pushed or tugged. Then there's a hole in the ceiling, and where people have noticed someone looking down at them, like they'll just glance up and they think that they see someone glancing down at them. But as soon as they look up, it's not there anymore. And you can hear in the hull of the ship, you can hear clanks and taps like men are working on the ship. That's more likely residual, but yeah, I think that John Henry guy is kind of like creeping on people. So yeah. Of course, because the ship is so luxurious, it has bars and restaurants. It has quite a few, right? Dre, I think you've been there a couple times, so you know. Carol Layden, she's been a server there for 14 years. She recalls seeing a lady sitting at one of the tables, and she was wearing just a cocktail type dress, but it was kind of like from the 40s. So it, you know, didn't really look like today's time. She had her hair pulled up and she seemed very pale in her complexion. She didn't move. She just sat there. She turned around and walked about 10 feet. So Carol turned around and she walked about 10 feet. And then when she turned around to look back at her, the lady was gone. She was, no one sitting there.
Yeah. It was actually just me at my lunch break.
Yeah.
Pale in a retro dress. That's me.
Hello. That's you. Yeah, for
I'm
sure.
Not a ghost.
Then there is a bar patron named Bruce that haunts the Starboard Lounge. People feel like they're being watched, and he likes to move the wine glasses around the bar. First class pool. Okay, here we go. There is a woman in a bathing suit scene. Now, I don't know what type of bathing suit, but she appears to be in her late 20s to early 30s. And she's wearing-
It's a one piece.
Yeah, it's like a 1930s. Yeah, probably with bloomers and stuff, right?
I love it.
She is seen heading towards the changing rooms or walking along the edge of the pool. Some have seen puddles or footprints right before she appears to them. So, yeah, I love that.
That's a trip. It's a trip.
Okay, so the Queen Mary has 355 rooms. The front desk will produce a list of all the rooms that have been reported paranormal activity.
Yeah, if they pick up the phone. I'm not bitter. Not mad. Yeah. I'm not mad right now.
Of all the 12 decks, the B deck is the most haunted. So in room B340, here's another room for you.
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one I want.
Reports, there's strange noises, footsteps, faucets turning on and off, hangers moving in the closet, furniture moves on its own, you hear voices, you will be touched, blankets get pulled off the bed. This room was closed to guests spending the night because activity was so crazy, but it still continued to happen even though they stripped the room bare. So you could still hear all this stuff happening even though there was nothing in there being moved. That is bananas. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then funny. So we did get that sheet that tells you all the rooms, right? And like which ones are haunted. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got it. And what it says on there is a psychopath, an anonymous psychopath haunts B340.
Ooh. An anonymous one.
Anonymous psychopath. Yeah.
Yeah. Anonymous psychopath.
I remember this so clearly. We stayed in room A119, and that one was the one where the fan moves even though it's not hooked up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens, you guys. It is haunted. Like I have no doubt.
Oh yeah.
It is haunted.
You've seen, I mean, ghost investigations have happened in this room, right?
Mm. Oh yeah.
Or just B474. Both.
In a lot of them.
Yeah.
In a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's you got to see the list. There's a lot of stuff that like little random things that go on in all the rooms. But like, I think in A119, it said that the fan moved, right? But I don't know if you all remember, but my experience was when we first got there, my son, he went into the bathroom and he was like, ooh, it's haunted, blah, blah, blah. He was like, ha, ha, ha. Well, he like got locked in the bathroom.
Oh, shit.
And he was screaming. Like, mom, stop playing. And I wasn't even anywhere near the door. So I went to go open it and just opened so easily. And then when I looked at him, he was like pale. Oh, he was like, stop playing. What did you do? He felt like I was tugging it away from him. Like I was holding it shut and he couldn't open the door.
That's creepy. That is creepy. Yeah.
That happened there. And then in the middle of the night, three something in the morning, I woke up to him saying, mom, and then like look up and go, I could feel a presence, right? Ooh. I could feel someone there. And I was like, what, Rick? No, no answer. Nothing.
Oh,
and I was like, fuck this.
Oh, no.
It was not Ricky. It was a voice that sounded like Ricky, but it wasn't him.
That's creepy. Stay in this room, a weird presence will stand next to you at 3 a.m. Is that on the list now?
Yeah. It's not on the list. It should be.
So you guys,
I really want to stay there. I want to do it.
In B340, guests in neighboring rooms will still report hearing noises coming from that room. And they will also see full-bodied apparitions appearing in front of them and then walking through the wall back into that room.
Hello. See, if we take people and they stay in the next room next to us, they're going to get a show too. They can't even complain. Okay. Hello.
Yeah, I know.
So besides the anonymous psycho, there is a claim that a crew member was murdered in that room and chases people out. Also, there was a pregnant war bride that stayed in that room. When her husband rejected her, she isolated herself and went insane in the room.
Oh, that's sad.
So those are other ones.
I mean, I've been there, yeah.
Oh my god, I understand.
I totally sympathize. I get you, girl.
Oh my god, poor thing.
Okay, so the Queen Mary holds a record for the most people aboard a vessel at one time, 16,683 soldiers during World War II. Serious overcrowding. There were many deaths. There was a burial at sea every 4 hours. Numerous sightings of men. Yeah, so numerous sightings of men in World War II era soldier uniforms roam A, B, and M, as in Mary, decks. Many EVPs of men speaking in military commands is also heard.
Wow. Every 4 hours, think about that, y'all. That's crazy.
I know. Mm-hmm. You have to understand too that they had many prisoners of war on top of their crew, and they didn't treat them very well, so probably the majority of the people that were dying were the prisoners of war. Yeah. So in September 18th, 1949, second senior staff officer William E. Stark, he wanted a drink. His captain gave him permission to go, so he went on the hunt for some gin. So a steward, F.R. Stokes, found him some, but was unaware that a fellow shipmate had used the empty gin bottle to store some cleaning fluid, which is called tetrachloride.
And Stark it tastes the same as gin, because gin is nasty.
Right?
He couldn't taste the difference. He's like, oh, this is gin. This is what it is.
Yeah.
Stark then went to Stokes' cabin and said, I think I've drank some type of acid. He fell into a coma and died. Officer Stark is seen along the main deck and promenade, also at the control panel in the engine room, holding a clipboard. And I guess he's still looking for his gin.
Oh, make better decisions. Look for something else. After all this time, switch to anything else.
Yeah.
Anything else. Anything else. You know what I mean? And there's so many other options. There's like that screwball peanut butter. Why isn't he looking for that? It's delicious. Okay, I'm just saying. There's just other things.
So, Red, this one's for you. In the Queen's Salon, a lady in...
Oh, God. Is she wearing white?
Yes, a lady in white is so seen dancing. Annoyed. I love it, though. She's seen dancing in the shadowy corner, and she's also seen in the lobby near the piano. She's in an evening gown from the 30s. She's seen gliding down the stairs towards the lobby, walking past corridors, or disappearing into the elevators. She has made some appearances during ghost tours. Yes.
Damn.
How fun is that?
Yes.
Okay, we need to do this. Let's check it right now.
Shadow people And we've talked about shadow people before. They aren't ghosts. Shadow people are seen everywhere as well. They've caught many of them on camera. They've been seen hiding in rooms or along the hallways. Let's see here. Lastly, guests tell stories of ghost cats haunting the ship.
Ghost cats, you say?
Yes. Many EVPs have caught meows from the changing rooms near the first and second class pools. Guests also feel invisible, like brushing up against their legs. And there's absolutely no animals found on the ship. I'm pretty sure they could find their way onto the ship, being out there, you know, in the port, but they look and there is none. So I love that there's ghost cats there's on the Queen Mary.
Ghost cats on the Queen Mary.
So I know there's been so many shows done on the Queen Mary. I'm sure over the years, there's just been so many. One of the very, very first ghost hunting shows that I ever watched, it was from England. It was called Most Haunted. Yvette Fielding is the host. I love her. She's just like very outspoken. I think her husband is like the camera guy. So he's always there with her.
I love
it. And then medium Derek Acorda, he was also on that show. He just recently passed away a couple years ago. But in July 2005, they came to America and they did a whole thing on that, which now I have to look it up and rewatch it. But of course, our beloved Ghost Adventures started off their season 10 at the Queen Mary. This was in October of 2014. And there's some clips that I saw with Zach interviewing some of the people that work on the ship. So he interviewed a guy named Rob Worldsky, and he's actually written quite a few books about haunted Queen Mary. But he's actually held, now this was in 2014, so I'm sure it's more now, but at that time he had held 60 seances on the ship. And he's heard people, they've heard voices, disembodied voices, which is basically voices that you hear with your ear, get out. And then some also say, I'm going to kill you. And so Zach basically asked him, why do you think they're saying that? That's like a really weird thing. And he said, because there are so many mysterious deaths that happened on the ship that nobody knows about to this day or have not been figured out. So if you think about that, that's scary. Of all the ghosts that we know about and all the deaths that we know about, there's actually many more that are kind of shady.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at one point they had like 16,000 men.
Right. Oh yeah.
A death, you know, a funeral at sea every 4 hours. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Obviously we don't know everything that's happened on this ship. That's just insane. They should do a physical mediumship on the Queen Mary and see what kind of crazy ectoplasm comes out of it.
That'd be wild.
Out of the lady.
So they start talking. He's still talking to this Rob guy, right? And he starts asking about John Petter's death right there on the door 13. And he said that they've seen an apparition of, you know, John there. And he said, what do you think about that? And he's like, that death was definitely fishy. So yeah. So like you're saying, how could he not get through within that 60 seconds? So something.
That's a long time.
Yeah,
that's
something's not right.
Walk through an elevator door.
Yeah, something's not right there. Okay, so the Commodore, which I think is the second in command from the captain, Zach's talking to him and he said him and his wife are staying the night on the ship. And early the next morning, his wife told him, I'm going to go get some coffee. He said he vaguely remembers her telling that. He wasn't really quite sure. But then he heard a woman in bed with him whisper in his ear saying, I am so cold. I am just so cold. And when he woke up asking his wife, well, where's your coffee? There was nobody in bed with him.
No.
Oh, shit.
No.
Okay, but definitely a female because we're all cold all the time.
Right.
Okay.
So Captain Will Kane, he believed, now I love this, that this captain is actually taking in this paranormal shit and just going with it. He believes that the Queen Mary is a portal to the spirit world. And the reason why he says that is he's like, you have to realize we are an iron hull floating on water. That's like a double whammy of energy for all this shit mm-hmm. to happen. And that's so true.
Oh, I never thought of that. That's scary. Right. You know what? We shouldn't stay there. That's a bad idea.
No. So he said there were 51, yeah, during the sailing years. So during the sailing years where it was just, you know, nice travel time, there was 51 recorded deaths. That's like heart attacks, strokes, kind of like that kind of deal, flu mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. But thousands among thousands during the war. So you can just imagine how many people actually died on this ship.
When they crashed into that other... like ship, you have mm-hmm. to imagine that impact also killed so many, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
That's
so
awful.
I'm going to end it with this one, you guys. Now, when I did Sally's house, I talked about Peter James. He's the medium with the mustache runs. At that point, I had forgotten that he passed away many years ago. I think he died in 2007. But one thing that I did not know is his base camp was at the Queen Mary. So that's where he did the majority of his like investigations.
Oh, how cool is that? That is so cool.
And I love him and I just cannot believe that he was right here in my own backyard. So he considered the Queen Mary his just love, the love of his life. And they've done, this guy Rob, in some of these seances that they've done, they've actually been able to contact Peter and he's actually said to them that he is protecting the Queen Mary. He is her guardian. And this was like a week after he died. Like as soon as he died, they were able to like contact him. So his spirit still is on the Queen Mary. He's protecting her.
I love it.
You guys, on this ghost adventures, well, when Rob is telling Zach this story, they have a clip of Peter James walking through the second class pool area talking to little Jackie. You guys, oh my God.
I need to see this.
She is talking back to him. She's having a full-on conversation with him and it's disembodied, you guys. You can hear her talking.
That
and it
is
bananas. It is bananas. And he's actually like, no, I'm not going to leave until I know you're okay. And it's so wild. So I'll send that clip to you guys. So there you go.
Immediately right
Queen
now.
Mary. I'll send it to you and you guys don't watch it until tomorrow.
I love the Queen Mary.
Don't watch it until tomorrow because it will scare you tonight.
Oh, hell, I can't watch stuff like this at night.
Yeah, I won't be able to sleep and shit, but I'll watch like murder shows.
Right.
Are y'all ready for...
Badass story of the week.
Story of the week.
Yeah.
Totally in sync, and I'm proud of it.
In sync.
Yep.
I love this story. I love them all. Zambi Matee. We have Zambi Matee, and she is from Kenya. And this beautiful badass is so brilliant. She is so smart. Kenya has a problem with plastic pollution, right? Okay. We've all seen it, right? We don't see it like they see it. I mean, it's literally along the side of their roads,
right?
Oh, inside, like everywhere they go, right? It's everywhere.
Bad.
Well,
yeah.
She got tired of this, right? So Zambi Matee, she actually said, I was tired of being on the sidelines. So she is a materials engineer. She is not just a badass. She is also a smart badass. She created a product made out of plastic and sand. And you know that foam? I don't know if you guys know this, but that polystyrene, whatever, that foam that they put all the to-go containers in. Can you imagine how much we're creating with COVID? Holy shit. Right?
Like a ton.
That's just trash. That's not recyclable. You can't put it in the recycle bin.
Yeah.
It's done. Mm-hmm. It's over. It's past the point of recycling, right? They made it out of recycled product, but now it's just garbage, right? And it does not disintegrate. It does not degenerate. It's trash. And it's filling up the landfills. So she took this material and plastic in general, and she mixed it with sand, and she created a brick that is 5 times stronger than concrete.
What?
Yeah. She didn't just... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just thinking about her in the lab going, by golly, I've got it! And then it's just like strong as fuck. Girl.
Yes. There's a video of her, and the brick is like, it's a little bit wider than a normal brick, and it's like half the size, but thinner. And you see her taking this plastic slash sand brick, and she's just throwing it on the concrete and tossing it on the concrete. The shit's not going to go anywhere.
Wow.
It doesn't biodegrade, first of all, right? It's not going anywhere. It's not breaking. So they make pavers, right? And they're making things look all pretty and decorated. They make them in all different kinds of colors. Right?
Oh my God, I love it so much.
Yes, it's freaking amazing. She created a company. She is the founder of Genji Makers, which is what these pavers are. And she's not just making these pavers, right? She's also making manhole covers, because why not?
Love it.
Why not? Let's make more stuff.
This is brilliant. How do you spell Genji?
G-J-E-N-G-E.
Genji. Okay.
These pavers are brilliant. She's making manhole covers. She didn't just make the concept of the idea, she actually even built the machine that creates these building
blocks. She's like, hold on, hold my coffee, I gotta make a whole
all right of it now. Like just do it right now. She even made they kind of look like Lego. I don't know if this is ever going to show it. They look like Lego bricks.
I love it, she's so cute.
So cute. You have to see the video that she makes. It's just so cute. This company has they make about 1500 bricks a day, and so far since the reporting of this, right, the company was founded in 2018, and they have saved 20,000 tons of plastic. When you think about that, right? 20,000 tons is a shit ton. But when you think about how much one plastic bottle actually weighs, it's a lot less. Like, what do you need, like 50 plastic bottles just to make 1 pound, right? Mm-hmm. So like extrapolate that, right? And that's in 2 years. So in 10 years, like,
she's doing it. She's gonna change lives.
The world. They need to make this shit happen everywhere. You know?
Yes.
Stronger than concrete.
I love stories like this, people like going out and making amazing things happen. And then I just think, what am I doing?
Always. Every single day.
Every time. Because she's a total badass, a smart badass. I love this story. I love it. Is there like a way to support them? What is there anything that we can do to help this badass?
I didn't look into that. I'm pretty sure that you can always support it and donate to the cause, right? They have a huge team. It's in Kenya. I know that all of the materials that they receive are absolutely free. So all of the material that's making these pavers, they don't have to pay for it. And they get it in like little chips. Smart. They get it in little pieces already chipped out, and then they file it down or sand it down, you know, to make it even smaller. So it's just such a beautiful company. And I always like when people do things that help to save the world, because this household, we have 3 freaking containers, like one for trash, one for plastics that get recycled, right? Like bottles and cans. And then another one that goes into the recycle bin.
Yeah.
And I mean, my husband and I are constantly researching, like, well, what do we do with this, like polystyrene foam / styrofoam type stuff. You can't recycle it. I'm constantly on our waste management website to see what they do, what you can do. For here in the US, you can go to earth911.com, which is like my resource for all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you can look into what more you can do to help recycle and freaking save the planet, because that's the goal, right?
Yes, I love it. And you know, my sister-in-law, my hubby's sister, she has really gotten her family into picking up trash at the beaches, you know, recycling everything, doing these steps. And she's being such a good example to so many people that we can all do these little things, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. These aren't big, but if we all do these things, it makes a difference. It makes a big difference. So I love that.
We did go on a hike recently, and I did tell you right about this. Like I did this hike shortly after I had Jonathan at my heaviest weight ever, and I struggled, and it was hard. I was like sweating and I was unhappy the whole time, and the kids were having a great time. Like now 35 pounds less, I did this hike thinking, oh, I'm gonna get it, I'm gonna go. This thing was so easy.
Yeah,
it was girl. So easy. I didn't break a sweat. I freaking carried my 30-pound baby. Yes. Like, oh, you're tired, baby. Come on, let's go. You know, and it opened my eyes in a way I've never had them open before, where, wow, what 35 pounds does, how much it weighs you down.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
It's freaking amazing. But my point is, we were on this hike, and my husband is so cute. He sees like a bottle cap, and he's like, Aurora, go get the bottle cap. And we're like going along the hike, and we're picking up trash and putting it in our pockets. You know?
So you're like really good people.
It is something we strive for. But you know, on top of that, so like the end of the hike is, you know, we're at the end of the hike. We see like the bison area. And then there's like this little dog running around, and of course, my heartstrings are being tugged. He's a puppy, and he's our main street. And we're like, I look at my husband, he's like, great, you're going to stop, huh? And I'm like, you just here. Yeah, we're going to stop. So me and Aurora are like running the opposite way. She's tired. Her feet hurt. She's been complaining she wants to get in the car. And this puppy just enticed her to like chase him. So we tried, but you know, there was like 10 people in the neighborhood trying to get this dog. So once we like lost him, we were like, he's going to get found, but we're not going to find him. And that's okay. Yeah. So she's and that's the kind of person that I'm trying to raise. That's the kind good of girl. Human that I want.
You're so, doing a good job.
Pick up trash.
Proud of you, Jay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great badass story of the week. I loved it. And your family is a bunch of badasses. And you are killing it. You're being a total badass. I just love it. So many positive things happening.
Yes. So her name is really, Zambi Matisse. Really good.
Good job, Dre. Good job.
Yay.
Right. Hit us up on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. We've got a website that Timo does, and hopefully more fun things will be on there soon with our clued up day. The website is handcuffsandsagepodcast.com. And our email is handcuffsandsage@gmail.com. And we just love, love, love hearing from you guys. It makes our day. Everyone can be a badass. You take 2 seconds, leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us in the biggest way. Check out our Patreon page and don't miss out on some really cute swag. Let me spoil you. You choose, you know, $1, $3, or $5 levels, and you get, you know, all sorts of fun handcuffs and sage goodies. Can you guys think of anything else? Did I do it?
You did it.
Oh, yeah, doing yeah. It. Yay. good job, y'all. Good job. Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
Yep.
And remember,
We do what we want.
Woo! All the time. All right, y'all. Good job.
Goodbye. Love you.
Bye. Hello.
Bye-bye.
Handcuffs and Sage is hosted by Red, Timo, and Dre in a shitty guest room in Los Angeles.
Theme music is Leave Now by We Are Wasted. Cover art done by Megan Winchester.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Show some love on iTunes. Be a badass and do what you want. Until next time.